Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 20th, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know what? One of our most frequent contributions is always being made now by O'Malley.
Yeah, the guy just, he's got all kinds of stuff to share.
And I love that about him.
Yeah, and if it was crap, we wouldn't put it on the show, but it's always good.
Oh, believe me, we have a lot of people who give us crap all the time. We don't put them on the show, though. But I like to think of our show as a show for the fans, by the fans, for
there
the fans,
go.
Right?
So, yeah, do you get a little America the Beautiful playing in the background?
Yeah, exactly. We the poker people.
We the poker people. Well, he wrote in to us a couple weeks ago. Apparently, he's taking a class, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's a class about language and its vast complexities. Boy, I bet they could talk for days about me. And he said they started talking about jargon and lingo, and the professor asked them all to think of something they do outside of their major and write a sentence on it using the jargon and lingo from this activity.
Hmm.
Right. Interest has already peaked here. And he said the professor wanted us to really think of the words we use when doing this activity and really saturate our sentences with lots of reallys. Our saturate our sentences with words common in English but that mean different things to this particular group of people.
So let me
and then
guess.
At the end, the class got to guess what that was.
I would imagine he did it on women's professional softball, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And we'll find a way to tie it into poker somehow. No, of course he did it on poker. And so here was his sentence, and then he has a couple questions for us afterwards. All right, ready?
Okay.
Says, I had Dolly Parton in the big blind with several limpers. No reason to bloat the pot, so I wrapped. I flopped top two on a ragged board and got the stack in after a check raise. Got counterfeited with running cowboys, hitting the turn and river, and was busted. I called for checks knowing I'd bleed those two, because after that I was on major tilt.
It's so sad that we all know exactly what that sentence meant, isn't it?
But the good news is O'Malley's got a top 10 country hit now.
You really should have read that with a little twang in your voice, to be honest. I had Dolly Parton in the big blind.
Yeah, he's got, you know, got running cowboys and, you know, bleeding, all kinds of stuff. It's great. It's a perfect country song. All right, so then he asked, obviously they read all these sentences out loud to the class, and then he said only a few people knew that he was referring to poker, and he was amazed and wants to know whether this is proof that poker has plateaued, or was this a sentence no one would have understood even during the poker boom?
Huh. Well, I don't think that's proof that poker has plateaued. That's kind of a weird...
It is a statistically good sample size, right?
Yeah, I guess.
In one class somewhere.
Yeah, I know. And the thing about it, too, is regardless of how popular poker is in our own minds because we're in the poker world, it will never be ubiquitous. You know what I mean? Stay tuned because that word will probably find its way back into the show somehow. I just feel like it's just a segment of our society, and no matter how many people we get to do it, we'll never actually be able to have things like this uttered in a classroom and everyone know what it means. So that is not a good example of saying whether or not poker is plateaued or if it's still climbing, you know, to me.
No, and I told him to a lot of those same reasons, but also my problem with this, and I love the exercise, and I give the professor a lot of credit for it, but it is a contrived exercise, right?
Yeah.
The professor's up there saying, not only think about jargon, but really think hard and really use a bunch of words. And then when you get those instructions, you really try hard to pack as much jargon into one sentence as possible. So my question here is, you know, if there wasn't this exercise and O'Malley was telling us about this, would this be the words he used?
Right.
And I think probably at most half of these words would actually make it into that conversation. I mean, who says Dolly Parton anymore? No one says running cowboys anymore. A few people are rapping the table. You know, you bloat the pot sometimes, but not all the times. You know, it's still chips for a lot of us, not checks. So, you know, I think, you know, if it was not contrived, the sentence would be different, and I think people might have understood it more.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing, too, is it seems to me that this sentence was a sentence that he would be uttering to a fellow poker player, not to a layman.
Right.
You know, and I know it's the same thing what you just said, but what I'm trying to get across is he was giving, like, analysis in this sentence rather than just telling somebody
it's
something.
True. Yeah.
So, you know, the analysis there is reserved for those who are in the know, and I feel like the uninitiated wouldn't really appreciate the sentence. Even if you broke it down into layman's terms, they still don't care about you, why you wouldn't have raised the pot or whatever, because you're not talking to somebody who cares about poker. So, it's interesting, though. It's an interesting exercise.
Yeah, and I think what also would be interesting would be to have O'Malley or the classmates actually write a sentence explaining the situation in a way that everybody can understand what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine how long that sentence would be? I mean, you take out all the Dolly Partons and running cowboys, but you still got to explain all this stuff to someone.
I was playing a game known as poker. It involves these rectangular paper, sometimes plastic products, thrown at other people with little artistic drawings on each side and numbers to correspond with each level. You know, I mean, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, just think about rapping. I mean, it's check. How do you even explain a check?
So yeah.
I mean, you can't say that. You have to say,
not to bet.
Yeah, yeah. But retain an option to, you know, there's all kinds of crazy stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
But I think it was a great example of just how complex language is, and I think that was the professor's point. So kudos to Professor Dude.
And it's also
that one of those suit coats with the little
the patches on the elbow.
Elbows. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The corduroy patches.
Yeah.
It's also a good lesson for us too. I mean, sometimes we talk on the show about things like this or whatever, and sometimes we forget that we pick up new listeners all the time, and we always like to revisit things like that. I mean, I think there's a certain level of poker intelligence that our listeners have at this point, though, that and they didn't learn it from us, obviously, because we're not very bright. We get that all the time from people on Twitter. But no, I just think that it's fun to see how many different things. And I've actually explored writing a story like that once for the magazine, but I got away from it. And then he also asks about it if he thought that it would if people would understand it even during the boom and the height. If this wasn't the height, which I don't think this is the height of poker. I think it's obviously settled down. I don't know if it's plateaued, but I think that it's still growing. But I think the height of the boom, yeah, I think this sentence would have been understood. I think, especially when poker was really rolling along and every person on the planet had their own internet website and whatever. I think back then people were like always into trying to find out what the nicknames of hands were and different slogans and whatever. Like the Cowboys and Dolly Parton thing right there alone, you know, those are famous nicknames of hands, so... I think that, I think during the height, a lot more people would understand that than they do now.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought up the whole the poker lingo thing too, because I meant to bring that up and I forgot. And it's real important because, you know, we do need to be reminded every once in a while to try to not be as linguist as we can.
So do we explain this sentence then to people who are listening who may not have understood all those terms?
Wow. We don't have enough time for that, I don't think. Let's just vow not to use half of these terms ever again.
We have a hotline. We're going right to the hotline early this week because we have a pretty long main topic. It's 813-448-1120. If you call it, we use it. We'll give you something cool. We haven't had Sir Gundam on the show. We've knighted him. He's contributed so many hotline calls that AT&T wants to make him their vice president. But we haven't had him on the show in a while, and he called in, and variants, horses, and my family.
three things that should not be in a sentence.
When Chris was talking about this gambling and his dad and brother making all these bad bets, you know, they were just making high variance bets. They weren't necessarily bad bets. You know, when you're a handicapper, you know, you still can do a high variance bet if you think that the high variance, you know, if it's 1 in 30 and the horse has a 1 in 20, then, you know, it's a good bet even though it's high variance. So, your bets weren't necessarily that much better than your brother's and your dad's. It's just that they were lower variance.
All right, here, I'm gonna defend your old dad here.
Good.
Or actually defend you, I guess.
Thank you.
I think Gundam's a little confused here, and I'm sure he'll remind us that he's not, if I'm wrong. But, yeah, I understand what he's saying, that just because a horse is 20-1 odds doesn't make it a bad bet. It's a high variance bet. That makes sense. Now, the situation I remember from the story that you were telling was your dad was betting on horse number 8 purely because he liked the number 8.
Yes.
All right, so there's no handicapping involved going into your dad's decision. It's just, hey, when I was a kid, Grover said 8, and I stuck with that number for the rest of my life regardless. And that is not a high variance bet. That's just a bad bet. That's no research. $2, lottery ticket, hoping to win.
Right, exactly.
Am I correct?
Exactly. And the other thing, too, is it's interesting to hear someone say, like Gundam specifically, that, you know, it's just a high variance bet because you know, it's kind of like if you're an 8-1 dog, but you're getting 9-1 on your money, that you should put all your chips in the middle because you're getting a better. No, you wouldn't do that because it's still too much of a risk, and it's a risk that you shouldn't take because you're an educated player.
Yeah.
And so for him to say that, but he wouldn't follow that variance on a poker hand. You know, it's. I totally agree with you. It's my dad just and my brother just seeing names or numbers that they like and calling them out and saying I'm going to play that, whether they're a dog or a favorite. You know, so
yeah, because there's just as much chance that your dad would pick a favorite.
Yeah,
using that system.
Exactly,
right?
Because the favorite was in the 8 spot occasionally during the day. So 100%. It was more of an ignorant bet than it was an educated bet.
And yeah, yeah. And that's like in poker too, it'd be the same thing with playing 7-3 offsuit. A raise.
Right, exactly.
It's high variance, sure, but it's...
Eventually, it's a 7-3 will flop 7-7-3.
Yeah. It's an educated game, and you're supposed to make educated decisions based on the information you have, and 7-3, if you've studied poker, you know that's not a good hand to play in that situation, so you don't play it.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, hey, we got our new swag policy now, so Gundam's back in the running. And this week we're going to give him a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for the Apple products from Smapsoft. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store, or you can send us an email or call the hotline and try to win one.
Very good. See if he, and you know, I have to say too, there's no reason for Gundam to call back and reply on this, because we won't use it on the show. We've already used him, and we don't want to have this back and forth.
That's how funny it is.
Maybe we'll put it in the Easter egg at the end of the show.
But no, we can certainly start a discussion on the forum, though. It's been a couple months.
Yeah.
I've gone back and forth on the forum. So,
yeah, so
let's have a high variance horse race betting thread going on there. That'll sure get our numbers up.
I'm going to let you read the mailbag because I want you to pronounce the guy's name.
All right, this comes from Turdzilla.
Turdzilla.
From Troy, Michigan. And he said he recently drove round trip from Michigan to Florida. Folks, there are planes now. There are these magic airships that you can get on and will fly you from point A to point B very quickly and cheaply.
Yeah,
I don't even drive in Florida anymore.
With the cost of gas, it's pretty much the same price anyway. I mean, really.
Well, maybe he wanted to see the country. You know, that's fine.
Okay.
All right, he recently drove round trip from Michigan to Florida and has listened to 20-plus of our podcast.
Wow.
Boy, I hope he didn't have me with him. You're like, hey, pull over. We need to get some Merle Haggard. he says he had an uncomfortable situation in a Florida poker room that lends itself to an etiquette lesson. He was sitting in seat 1 watching seats 2 and 9 and a hand to the river. The dealer declares a split pot when it is clear that seat 9 had won. I mentioned the air, and so did the relief dealer that was coming in. Seat 2 spent the rest of the time at the table suggesting that I had stolen half the pot from him by pointing out the air. Quote, what business was it of yours? I'm sure it's an old crusty guy. That's the really dealer said the card speak and to drop it. I gave C2 some leeway since he was on his third buy-in, but I was worried that the dealer would have split the pot and mucked the cards before the error was discovered. So any comments on my behavior or C2's?
Well, the first thing I would do is call the floor over and say, do you have security? Would someone escort me to my car when I'm getting ready to leave? But you know what? I really have to admit that I usually say something to, and I probably I don't know. I mean, if you fear for your safety, you know, because you think this guy might beat you up or something, I don't know. But maybe we're not supposed to say anything. I think that the dealer is supposed to be saying it. But I think that one of the rules is that all players are supposed to – a lot of the rules, right, aren't all players supposed to indicate when an unfairness is being perpetrated or something. So I think it's up to you, or if you notice it, to say something, which – you know, it could get you into some serious physical harm, but it is upon all players to make sure the right hand is paid, right? I think that's the rule.
Yeah, well, yeah, certainly it's a rule that we talked about this on the show at the Beau Rivage. You know, it's listed as one of their rules you know, all players and staff members are responsible to protect other players.
Right.
And in this case, in fact, actually, in that room, technically, it gets you a good penalty for keeping quiet.
Yeah.
Not knowing. So here's what I would do. If seat 9 is bigger than seat 2, then I'm going to point it out, because seat 9 will have my back, because I just got him half of the pot, right? And he'll beat up seat 2 for me. If I'm in seat 9 and anybody else is in seat 2, don't point it out, because I can't help you, man.
You got to size up that competition pretty quickly and then say something or not say something.
But no, seriously, I think you should say something. I mean, here's the thing. Think about it. You got to think about it from the seat 9's perspective, because you're going to be in seat 9 sometime. Would you want somebody else to point out the fact that the entire pot is yours, not just half the pot?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you do what you want. Now, what I find really galling in this story is C2 here.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of dirtbag are you to belligerently argue with someone about a pot that was not legitimately yours?
Right.
All right, now I understand being upset. Hey, if you didn't say anything, then I would have got, you know, $50 or something. But that's something you say internally in your head. You know, you don't bark out, hey, if you didn't say anything, I would have robbed that guy of $50.
That's right.
That's what you're saying.
That's right.
And I think it says a lot more about C2 here than does about our hero. You know, I don't want that guy in C2 in my poker room, ever.
No.
Because if he's willing to not only take that by air and then argue with you about it, who knows what else he's capable of doing.
Yeah.
And none of it's good for the game.
I'm glad the relief dealer was there and defending him, too. I mean, it's really sad that, you know, that, like you said, I mean, you didn't win it legitimately. How could you possibly be yelling at somebody because you wanted to cheat? So what kind of player are you? Then you know that you have to watch this guy for the rest of the way as an angle shooter and whatever, too. It's just sad.
Yeah. So there you go. Turdzilla from Troy, Michigan. You did the right thing.
I do speak up a lot, too. I probably speak up more than I should at the table when I'm playing.
You know, I guess the other argument, too, and I'm generally a quiet person at the table. You know, unless somebody engages me in conversation or I'm in a particularly happy mood that day, I sit there and keep to myself and play my cards. And so for me, it's a little tougher to speak up at some point and say, hey, are you sure that's right? And then here's the other thing I always struggle with, too, particularly in Omaha, which is where this happens a lot. You know, I hate to be the guy that says, hey, whoa, are you doing that right? And then find out that I'm wrong.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, you want to avoid that embarrassment, so you just keep quiet. And I think there's an argument to that, too, that, you know, hey, if it's your pot, you need to be the one that speaks up and says, hey, wait a minute, that whole pot's mine.
Yeah.
Now, I get this other rule, but, you know, I think you're asking a lot of the players to force them to speak up when they may not be completely sure of it themselves, and then you get them in a situation where they're embarrassed for no reason other than trying to help you.
Right.
So, I can see it from all kinds of angles other than C2's angle.
Slippery slope.
Yeah. All right, Thirdzilla, for your next drive down to Florida, we're going to send you a t-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
I think the shirts say, "If I have the nuts, tell me."
Don't tase me, bro.
Don't tase me, bro. Return to the call to four, and this week we needed Jody to help us out. This comes from John Ross via email. He says, he said, players push all in on the flop. There is one player after me, and I see he is short on chips. So I just call the all in, which I think covers the player behind me, who calls after my call. I instantly flip my cards and see he still has chips. Whoops. Is my hand frozen? They made me not be able to bet for the rest of the hand. Is this correct?
All right, here's what Jody says. I would say it's up to the other player with chips left as to whether or not betting continues, leaving the player who wasn't paying attention at a disadvantage. But that's just me. Flipping up cards in a tournament prior to action being complete can be viewed as collusion. Do you know the guy who you thought was covered? Perhaps you live next door to him, work with him, or are related to him, or trying to let him know that you had a big hand so he could save the remainder of his stack. I'm sure you're a fair and honest person, but the rules for these situations were made to protect 99.9% of the honest poker community from the 0.01% not-so-honest players. Like, see, two!
Yes.
For all these possible reasons, you should have been given a penalty away from the table after the hand as well.
Now, I'm a little confused by this. So, in other words, is Jody saying that he would walk over to the table and say, hey, the guy with the cards face down, if you want, the guy with the cards face up can still bet. You tell me what you want? Because that isn't right, because now he has all this extra information. What if they had the same hand, and then he could shove on him? You know what I mean? It's, and then force him to fold. I mean, I realize you made a mistake, but I think that no betting should happen, and then the penalty incurred.
See, I don't think you can penalize the player who didn't expose their cards in this situation. You were the one that made the mistake. And when I've seen this happen, that's exactly it. The guy has exposed his cards, and then exactly what you said. The other guy pushes all in.
Right.
And then it puts you to a test. You got to find out, hey, is this guy just trying to take advantage of me because I exposed my hand, or does he really have me beat? And hey, you know, all is fair in love and war. You shouldn't have exposed your hand. That's the quote unquote penalty you get for it at that particular moment, I think.
Yeah, that's a brutal situation. I don't think anybody's going to be happy with it, no matter what ruling happens, I guess.
No, of course. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, this is the kind of thing with the call to floor, anyhow, is, you know, no one's ever really happy when mistakes are made.
Right.
You know, you can never really, truly rectify it correctly. And in this situation, I think it's incumbent on the person that makes the mistake to suffer the most.
Wow. Yeah, that sucks. And I wonder if it was a situation, too, where you were seated, you couldn't see all the guy's chips or something like that. Because then it's like, okay, the guy didn't have his big chips in front and then you can really take the argument forever, too. And then
well, here's the thing, too, and I think I told John this, too, when I responded to him, that when I'm playing, I do not table my hand until I specifically hear the dealer say, show me your cards.
Yeah.
Or turn them up, or whatever the lingo is that he or she is using at that time.
Yeah.
Because I want to be sure that I'm not missing something around the table like this situation. Now, of course, the downside to that, too, is we know dealers are humans, too, and make mistakes, and sometimes they'll tell you to turn up your hand, you turn up your hand, oopsie, you still got chips, and then you're back in the same situation, almost not through any fault of your own, other than the fact not paying attention to the other player. But I would rather have that second layer of protection of the dealer saying, all right, turn them up.
Yeah.
And I'd rather even have, sometimes I have players yell at me, hey, turn, I think we talked about this, like, guy at Bayo 101 when I was out there. And I was like, hey, turn your hand up. And I'm like, oh, hey, I'll turn my hand up when the dealer tells me to, sir. You're not a dealer.
That's right.
So, I mean, that's kind of something that I would do to kind of help prevent that. But, you know, again, when I sit down at the table, I know if I make a mistake, I got to pay the price for it, whatever that price is. You know, sometimes I'm not happy with what that price is and would argue about it, but you got to take responsibility for the fact that you made a mistake.
Yeah, plus, I mean, it could be, like you said, an angle shoot. You know, you can want to see it to the end, hoping that your draw gets there and you don't have to pay any more for it or something of that nature. And then if you turned your hand up, then the other guy is frozen out of betting. You can't have that. So I guess that makes sense, too.
Imagine that as an angle shoot.
Yeah, exactly. You want to see all the cards and for your price, so you turn it up.
I start exposing my hand on the flop every time.
Sorry, no more betting.
Hey, no more betting.
Let's see if my backdoor two-card running flush gets there.
All right, John, we appreciate you sending in the Call to Floor. And new this year, we are giving swag away for Call to Floor submissions. And we are going to send you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net.
You know, we get a lot of people telling us just how awesome having Lee Childs on the show is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people forget that Lee Childs writes for us in the magazine, too. And I thought the other day that it might be really useful to our listeners and our readers and our web browsers to know that I've taken all of Lee Child's columns and I've tagged them all and put them as a quick link on our homepage so that you could literally just click his name where it says Strategy Lee Childs, and every column that he's written for us will come up on a page so you can read all of them and wade through all of his brilliant analysis and ideas. And, you know, Joe Navarro, too, one of our more popular guests and world-class Tells expert, he writes for us, too, and so does Jonathan Little. So I did the same thing with their archives. I've tagged them. Just go to antiupmagazine.com, and on the right-hand side, we have a quick link section, and you can just click on whoever you want to read about, and all of their columns come up. You know, Joe Navarro had that great Q&A running for us for a while, and then now he's writing regular columns for us. Jonathan Little always, every month, contributing some really good stuff for us. So anyway, just if you guys are interested in reading strategy that way, I've organized it nice for you guys on the homepage.
Excellent. And our weekly reminder of our 2012 poker cruise schedule. Go to antiupmagazine.com/cruise. Three great cruises, March 17th out of Tampa, August 27th out of Port Canaveral, November 10th out of Baltimore. And you can win your way on board on these great cruises. All those details are also up at antiupmagazine.com. We've got giveaways coming up at Tampa Bay Downs and Naples Fort Myers Greyhound Track and Daytona Beach Kennel Club here in Florida. Suncoast out in Las Vegas will be giving away packages for our August 27th cruise. And go to the website and get all the details on those great promotions.
Very cool. Hey, let's see what gathered up on the Antiup News Desk this week.
Ira Rubin, one of the 11 men indicted by the U.S. Department of Justice on Black Friday, has pleaded guilty to conspiracy in connection with his alleged role as a payment processor for PokerStars, Full Tilt Poker, and Absolute Poker. Rubin faces a prison term of 18 to 24 months when he's sentenced May 17th. That comes from our good friends at Poker News.
Now, is it still alleged when he pleads guilty?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. That's probably at this point, I'll go ahead and just edit that
just
right out.
Edit that out for me, will you?
Yeah.
No, I was just curious, though. I mean, it's not alleged anymore. So he's saying that he, according to what he's charged with, was
pleading
guilty.
Yeah, he's pleading guilty to the whatever's in the conspiracy charge. So, right. I mean, I guess it's just a description of what it was. So.
Man. Okay, 8 high-stakes poker pros, including Brad Booth, have filed a RICO complaint against Excapsa Software, saying employees of the former owners of Ultimate Bet stole at least $20 million from plaintiffs and other high-stakes poker players.
I always like when I hear RICO.
RICO.
It makes me feel like the Sopranos.
I always want to say Suave.
Suave?
Explain to me what this means and why it took so long. Is there a reason why it would take so long?
I can't explain why it took so long, but I'll be interested to hear more about that as that continues. Maybe it just took a while to
gather enough people
build a case, or it took them a while to figure out that they could file a RICO complaint against it. I don't know, I'm not a lawyer, but I don't know what exactly this means if they can't collect on any of the money,
right?
But I'm sure their lawyers think that it's going to work out, or they wouldn't waste their time on it. So
RICO is racketeer influence and corrupt organizations, right? Isn't that what that stands for?
Very good.
Yeah.
You used to be a Teamster, didn't you?
No. Jimmy Hoffa's my godfather, though.
Oh, man.
Sorry, dude. I didn't mean to be that funny.
All right, finally, some good news for former world champ Jonathan Duhamel. After being assaulted by two men who stole his Rolex and his championship bracelet during the home invasion in which his girlfriend has been charged as an accomplice last year, Duhamel began this year by making four final tables to PokerStars Caribbean Adventure, winning once and taking home a total of $1.2 million.
Man, the man's got game.
That's an amazing run, isn't it?
I mean, serious.
You know, we have a couple of our Antia Poker Cruise dealers also deal down at the PCA, and I asked them, you know, how the turnout was, because everybody was a little concerned after Black Friday how many Americans would show up. And I think they said the main event still got close to 1,000.
Yeah, I think it was over 1,000. It was like 1,072 or something.
You know, down from last year. I think they said somewhere around 1,500 last year, but that's still a sizable turnout.
Absolutely. Plus the fact that, I mean, no matter how big a tournament is, unless it's a single table satellite, you know, four final tables, and you know that the competition had to be good because you weren't getting the dead money in those things because online poker's gone. Right. So you got some damn good competition, and to make four final tables and then to win $1.2 million, he's definitely got some game, that guy.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's a great way to washing away last year's troubles. Crazy. Yeah. Can't even imagine that.
Yeah, it's just brutal. Hey, you know, we get to pull the O'Malley's move out of the oven this week.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this one. Omaha, baby.
And munch down. So yeah, that's right, Omaha. Let's revisit part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are sitting at an 8-game mixed table and are currently in the $4-$8 Omaha High Only round. Normally, you would play Omaha High Only in an 8-game mix at pot limit, but in this case, we play it at fixed limit. The action is tight pre-flop and then gets aggressive after the flop. It's only a six-handed table, but the level of play is pretty even with no one that much better than anyone else. We've been playing for about an hour and a half and are down $15 from our original buy-in of $100, $85. The blinds post, and the action goes under the gun calls, under the gun plus one folds, cutoff calls, and we look down at 10 of diamonds, 9 of diamonds, 8 of clubs, 6 of clubs on the button. This is a decent starting hand for Omaha. We'd like to have a suited ace with this, but it's worth seeing a flop with. We call the $4, as does the small blind, and the big blind checks. Pot is $20, and we hit gin. 9 of spades, 7 of spades, 6 of hearts. We've got the nut straight and top and bottom pair. We're not afraid of, well, anything here. The blinds check as the under-the-gun player leads out $4 into the pot. Cutoff folds, and we raise to $8. Both blinds call, and the under-the-gun pops it to 12. We cap it, figuring the blinds are going to call anything at this point, and they do. The pot has now ballooned to $84, and the turn is the jack of clubs. Both blinds again check, and again the under-the-gun player leads out. Limits have gone up, so the minimum bet is $8. So we're placed to our first decision. Do we flat call, hoping both blinds keep tagging along? Are we worried about a third spade or the board pairing? Or are we in a flat-out raising battle that we're going to keep counter-firing at?
All right, just like they do in Jamaica, Jamon Mon! We still have the nuts. We have a boat redraw. We like that there are spades on the board. Not afraid of them, because we want to build a pot now, because those spade drawers probably aren't going to go anywhere. I think the other the gun either has the same hand as we do, or is overplaying a weaker straight or top set. We certainly prefer the latter, but either way, we want more money in there, especially since the blinds aren't giving us any indication that they're going anywhere.
I just want the listeners, for those who can, to rewind it a little bit and listen to Scott, one, do the Jamaican accent, and then two, being unable to pull out of the Jamaican accent for a couple of words after he says, Jamon Mon. It was pretty damn funny. You were kind of like still talking in Jamaican there. It was pretty funny. But anyway, I love having the nuts and the redraw to a boat. But I did have to wonder, and you'll have to tell me, because I don't really care about limit very much. I just like to play it when I'm, you know, but when the home game. But when did that raise cost us money because it's limit? I mean, the pot is big, but if you two bet, will the blinds fold? And you have the nuts, so do you want them to fold? I just want to know what your opinion is before I... Because they just call. If they, you know, will they call if you just call and you're getting more money that way?
It certainly is a something that you got to take into account. I'm basing it off the fact that we know what we have.
Yeah.
You know, if there's some people with spay, these people are in this war going on with something, so I am... I'm of the thinking that they're not going to go anywhere here. And if they're not going to go anywhere here, then I definitely want to get their money right now.
Okay.
If I feel that they might be folding, then yeah, that changes something. But again, remember, we're still a little bit vulnerable, right? Things could happen on the river. So I'm fine just getting my money in right now. And we got this other guy, too, who I think we can have a little raising war. And there is an opportunity here that he doesn't have as strong a hand as we think he does.
Okay. Well,
we're the only one with the nuts here.
As we always do, we always write this the week before. So we wrote this before. And what I had written was, the pot is big, but if you 2-bet, will the blinds fold? If you do just call, will they call? If it's the latter, then you might make more money on the river. What we have to decide is whether the blinds have marginal hands or not. If it's a read thing, if you can feel like they're going to fold, then you might want to raise. But if you think they might call, you might want to call. I'd like them to come along, so I'm going to just call and just to be different than you.
I appreciate that.
So let's see what happens.
Hello again. We have decided to keep up the counterattack. We make it $16 to go, and unfortunately, both blinds fold. The under the gun pops it to $24, and again, we cap it. The pot is at 148, and the river is the very welcoming 5 of diamonds. This time, our opponent checks to us. We can't let any value slide, so we put in $8, and he raises. We pop him back, and this time he caps it. We make the obvious call, which leaves us only a dollar behind, but we know we're getting at least half of this pot, and our opponent tables 9 of hearts, 9 of clubs, 8 of spades, 5 of spades. All kinds of draws, but in the end, only the second nuts. We scoop the $212 pot and now stand at 213. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley, reminding you not to play the second nuts too fast in Omaha. And I hope to see you on the felt.
This is why Omaha is so awesome, man. We both had made hands and backup.
Yeah, and backup.
And that backup, I like to call alcohol here. It makes you all loosey-goosey. Makes you do what you're afraid to do when you're not, when you're more inhibited. You're like, you know, hey, look at that that hot chick across the bar. Oh, yeah, because you go say hi to her. No, I can never do that. 4 beers later, hey, you want to go out? And that's exactly what this is. It's allowing us to make these bets that if we didn't have that backup, we probably would not make. And here, I think, to me, there wasn't much reason for our opponent to think that he was behind in this hand. I mean, he's got a straight. 10-8, which is what we had, is an unlikely holding in Omaha.
Right.
So that jack on the turn should not have changed anything in his mind. So I can't really complain about his play, though if I was his, I probably would get suspicious on that last raise on the river and think, oh, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, you always get the first rule of Omaha is always to know what the nuts are. If you don't have them, you know, be careful.
Yeah.
And I still would bet out. I still would think. I mean, obviously, if you think that you don't have 10-8 on the flop and that jack didn't help him on the turn, then there's no reason to think that 5 helped you on the river either.
Right.
But when it started raising back and forth, then I got to think, oh my gosh, did this guy really wake up with 10-8? And I would have saved myself one bet there.
But, and you know what's funny is I remember from Gambit's home game, a week ago or a week and a half ago or whatever, that there was a hand that we were playing PLO, and I had the nuts on the flop. It was like straight to the king, and I'm betting it, and clearly somebody had 2-pair and somebody had a set or something, and I'm hoping that the board doesn't pair, and on the turn it didn't, so I bet again, and then on the river, the ace dropped, and now I didn't have the nuts anymore, but I didn't realize it. And they checked to me, and I bet, and they folded. And one guy folded 3 of a kind. And it was weird. You always got to pay attention to the hand. Even though that's not the case here, it didn't happen until the turn. With me, it happened on the river, and I was very fortunate that somebody didn't have the absolute nuts on me because I had bet like 3/4 of the pot there on the end, and I shouldn't have. I should have maybe bet less, or not even bet. I should have just checked behind and been happy with the pot because no one called anyway. But if they did, I'm getting a call or a raise by a better hand. So, yeah, you always got to pay attention to that board, and I never would have check-raised. And the funny thing is I really thought when I heard that he check-raised that they had the same hand.
Well, I think what I think is odd about that is really the check. I mean, the check – I mean, again, I still – if I'm him, I still think I had the best hand here.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to take a chance that you're going to check behind me and not get that one last bet in.
Yeah.
On that river. So I'm going to bet out. And maybe he just was trying to be tricky, and then after he checked, realized, oh, shoot, I should have bet. And then when you bet, you're like, oh, thank God, now I can make up for it by raising. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know. But yeah, if it was premeditated check raise, that's really weak, I think.
Yeah, when he check raises, then caps it, I mean, I just, you're thinking this guy's got the nuts. I tell you what, you got to love playing against second nuts players.
Oh, yeah, particularly in playing that way. That river was just brutal.
Yep. Brutal. Oh, man, unbelievable.
Great one. I love the Omaha.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
Okay, I've been looking forward to this show for a while now, Chris.
Well, you would think so, since we've been talking about it for 6 months.
Yeah, mostly because we keep pushing it off, so you're just building the anticipation more and more and more. But here's the thing. A couple months ago, one of our clients was talking to me on the phone and said, you know, hey, who's the most famous poker player? Maybe his first, or maybe he said who are the top five. Maybe we changed it. But whatever, he wanted to know who the most famous poker players were in the world now.
Right.
And I was a little stumped. And the first thing went through my head is, wow, this should be easy, right? And then I realized it was not easy. And he said the same thing. He's like, you know, hey, I don't think it's that clear anymore. And so I thought about it, and I'm like, hey, I totally agree. And it seems like an easy question. And then I started thinking about our good friend President Clinton. You know, we did that deposition. It depends on what your definition of is. And the whole world, Republican or Democrat, started laughing at him.
That's like the Family Guy impression of Bill Clinton, not the like Phil Hartman impression. You sounded just like
Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah, Seth MacFarlane there.
But in this case, it depends on what your definition of famous is, and I think that's where this whole thing starts. And maybe I'm wrong, but you tell me.
No, I totally agree, and I think that maybe I should go first with the definition then, since you all brought it that way. I always think that famous is like what Albert Einstein once said. It's all relative. I mean, I have the feeling the person who talked to you about this really meant within the poker world. Like, Phil Locke is famous, but only in the poker world, which is a big world, don't get me wrong, but not overall. Yeah. If Phil Locke went down the street in my neighborhood, I'm the only one who would know who he is, probably.
Right, but everybody else would be calling the cops on him.
Right, but he's famous. You know what I mean? Except, especially if he has his hood up, exactly. But
Kaczynski's in our neighborhood.
That's right, he broke out. So there are levels of fame, and I have to admit, when we do the list for ourselves, I'm going to have three lists. I called... One list is ubiquitous.
And you're going to define that for our listeners, right?
Yeah, that means, in this case, ubiquitous means it's everywhere. So I reversed it and made it that these players are known everywhere.
Gotcha.
Poker world, famous within the poker world. And then famous all time in all walks. So those are my three categories. When we get it, delve into the actual longer list of, you know, who the five that we're going to use, I'll use the ubiquitous one. But it's just because I just think that this person who's talking to you meant five poker players that every poker player knows rather than the other round. So I wanted to make sure I was, you know, complete with my analysis.
First of all, I want to say all time and all walks. That's a perfect name for a CD. Like Dire Straits or something.
Dire Straits.
All time and all walks drops March 16th.
The ATAW.
All right, well, I'm going to play off of your it's all relative. I think famous, like most adjectives, is subjective. And for me, I think I would say it means who transcends poker and is in the non-poker player community's consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I think the definition, you have to start with poker players who have gotten mainstream media coverage and or got decent poker TV airtime during the boom of 2003 to 2006. And what I'm thinking on that is, remember, we had this big boom. We had everybody who was anybody playing poker for 2 or 3 years. It was like the hot thing to do then, and then a lot of those people quit playing. You know,
right.
They moved on to their iPhones or whatever, Zynga or whatever, whatever the kids are playing these days. And the rest of us are still left playing poker. So during that time, I think people watched actual poker TV. The masses did more than they do now.
Yeah.
So those people are still stuck in their brains. So I guess what came down to me is I was, maybe it's because the wife and I are playing Family Feud on the Wii a lot now. But I was thinking of Family Feud, right? You know, we asked 100 people, name a famous poker player. Top 8 answers are on the board. Who would Joe and Mary at the grocery store mention if they were asked that question? That, right. That's where my list came from.
And that's what I'll, that's the 5 that I'll use. That's my ubiquitous
list. That's your ubiquitous.
Yeah. So I'll use that list too when we're talking about it later. But we had a lot of people write in.
Yeah, we got a lot of great feedback from folks.
So I feel like we need to probably mention what they all said. Rich from Joliet, he says, in his humble opinion, these would be the players who are immediately known within the poker community, well known by those who regularly watch televised poker, and who are recognized by a large portion of the general public. Like what Tiger is to golf or Mike Tyson is to boxing, even people who have never watched golf or boxing know those guys. And this is going to be mostly U.S.-centric. I am sure that Joe Hashem is huge in Australia, but that doesn't work for me here. So, good point.
All right, O'Malley says, famous to the layman, famous to the avid player, most infamous, most famous to me. I'm assuming we're excluding celebrity perennial World Series of Poker main event runners and celebrity high-stakes poker participants. I'm not really sure we have to, but that's where he comes from.
Daniel Kastner wrote in and said, I assume for being famous, you have to be known by not only the poker fans, but also the casual and very casual card players, even the people who watch poker on TV only while waiting for another show to start.
Who actually does that? God, I wish High Stakes would end so Golden Girls would come on. Pat Booth agrees with him. He says, when I think famous, I have to put myself in the shoes of the general brainless reality TV zombie population.
Mark Kilgore agrees as well. He says he thinks the TV boon players are better known than any pre-2005 players. So he's saying anybody who's played during that time has got a better chance of being famous.
And then I think to kind of wrap up what we're all saying, and Andrew Malowitz said, I think the most famous today would be someone that if you were in casual company that wasn't in tune with the poker world, would still know that person. So I think we got some agreement there. I mean, there's these little tangents, and I think some of our nominees are part of these tangents. But in general, I get the feeling that people are looking for people that the lay people know.
Yeah, right? People who don't know poker would still know them.
Yeah. Well, we got a great list here, and they're no particular order, some good suggestions, I think, and some funny ones. And then at the end, you and I will do our list of the actual ones.
Yes.
You know, this is just kind of like the warm-up. These ones don't count, right?
Yeah, because our lists are the end-all, pontificating, be-all of the lists. So. What we say goes. All right, well, let's get it started with, of course, the poker brat Phil Hellmuth, nominated by Michael Young, our Mid-Atlantic ambassador and longtime listener of the show. He says, Phil Hellmuth knows how to do the PR machine. It doesn't hurt that he has the most bracelets.
Yeah, see, I'll argue the bracelets doesn't really matter.
Mm-mm.
You know, see, you're talking about an accomplishment there. You're not talking about fame.
Right.
And most of those bracelets, I don't think were televised either. So, but I totally give him the PR machine. The guy is an aggressive self-promoter.
I would argue that aside from his 89 championship, which no one actually watched, I don't think any of his bracelets were televised, probably. I don't remember him winning any bracelets on TV.
Could be
wrong.
I did watch the 89 one, though. That's what got me into poker. Remember? I think I told you. I'm like, hey, that guy looks just like me. Of course, he looks completely different now. All right. Doyle Brunson, of course, we knew would be on the list. And this is what Rich from Joliet says about the godfather of poker. He is what you would expect to see at the poker table. The cowboy hat, the seasoned vet, the silent, watchful rounder. He's the embodiment of every romantic notion you could ever have about poker. I mean, he's like a character from fiction. Road gambling, shootouts, the early days of Vegas poker in smoke-filled rooms. One of the first World Series of Poker champs. 10 bracelets, 2 of them are main events. The nickname, the books. He's truly a living legend and has to be the most famous player anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, from a poker world standpoint, absolutely. And then again, with all the fame that he got for the book, the website, because even those commercials play in on channels where at the time there was no, you didn't have to be watching a poker program to see a commercial with him on or his name on it. So, and then of course the back-to-back world champions. I mean, those things get played over the news wires and everything else. So yeah, I have to agree.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said. I mean, we're talking about the lay people. I think you have to, and this is marketing 101, you have to have somebody that either looks different than other people or acts different than other people.
Yeah.
There's got to be something differentiating them. So, you know, as I said on Short Stack Radio this week, we talked about this a little bit. Scott Long is never going to be on one of these lists.
All right.
I look like every normal person out there. Well, I'm actually making myself sound a little bit better than I am. But, I mean, there's nothing unusual about how I look. There's nothing unusual about how I act at the table. I'm just another person taking up a seat at the table.
Yeah.
But Doyle's got the cowboy hat, and Hellmuth has the antics. So those are all things that people remember.
Yep, absolutely right. Okay, Barack Obama.
I like this one.
And, of course, it comes from someone from Chicago. Chicago Brian says, our president is certainly one of the most famous people on the planet, and he is known to be a poker player. So very interesting angle there, one that I may
explore.
I like
how he twisted that on us, yeah.
Yeah, so very interesting. And he's right. I mean, obviously everybody knows who Barack Obama is, so very good.
All right, Daniel Negreanu, we knew he would be on the list, and a lot of people put him on the list, so we got the two people's comments here. First, Daniel Kastner writes to say, he's always on television and leaves an impression. He's amusing, he's skillful, he doesn't look like the typical poker player what people would imagine. So even if you're not a poker fan, you just happen to watch poker on TV, you might see and remember him. I know that for me and many of my poker friends, he was the one of the first pros we could recognize. And of course, there's the name you aren't really sure how to pronounce the first time, so you see it and therefore spend more time reading it. What is that guy's name?
You know what? There are still people who can't pronounce it when they're actually like, that's their job on TV. It's hilarious. All right, so Rich from Joliet also said about Negreanu, he said, he is that young, smiley guy that plays poker and talks all the time. Everyone who has ever pursued a poker TV broadcast easily remembers Daniel. He said peruse, I'm sorry, not pursued. Very easily transposed there. What made him really stand out is the huge chasm between him and the poker player archetype. No poker face, no cowboy hat, no slick card shark image, no ornery tough guy, just a smiling, talkative, baby-faced poker millionaire.
Well, you know, I'm not going to argue necessarily with this, but again, we're talking about poker TV broadcast.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember exactly when Daniel became that TV star. Was it during the boom? Probably was, right?
Yeah, it was.
He certainly got more TV coverage these days now because he's just, you know, there's not a show that he'll ever turn down.
Well, he won World Series Poker Player of the year in 2004, I think it was, and that was the big year of poker. So I think that's definitely when he got his fame.
And as I mentioned, he was in a Katy Perry video. Nobody else on our list has been in a Katy Perry video.
Well, the other thing, too, is I want to jump back just a little bit to the Barack Obama thing. If you have your definition of what famous is, then I guess you also have to have your definition of what a poker player is. Do they mean people who play predominantly poker for a living, or do they mean people who just happen to play cards? So,
yeah.
You know, it's an interesting list. A lot of variations on how you could interpret it.
All right, Tony G, our good friend of Poker News. O'Malley says, because of his trash talking.
I have to disagree with this one.
Yeah, it might be a little bit of a stretch.
Nobody knows who Tony G is unless you're in the poker world.
Yeah, I think you'd remember if you saw him on TV, but he has really no exposure outside of poker.
Yeah.
That I'm aware of, really.
Yeah. Okay, someone mentions Ben Lamb. Nicholas Besser says, because of his World Series main event run, last American standing, and winning player of the year, I'd have to maybe agree to a point as far as in the poker world, maybe, but even now, I think if Ben Lamb sat down at, say, Derby Lane down the street or Sarasota or even at Tampa Bay Downs in our area, I don't think 8 out of 10 will know who he is.
That's probably true. Probably
so true. I don't think that he's in the top 5. But in the poker world, even in the poker world, yeah, I don't think so. So I don't know. I think I have to disagree with that one.
Potentially a future star.
Yeah,
right now.
Exactly.
All right, Annie Duke. We knew Annie would be on the list, too. And here's what Michael Young had to say about her. She took being a poker player to the masses. A lot of people didn't know her until The Apprentice. And a lot of times, she's the best-looking player at the table. She has a doctorate in mathematics to back it up. Because, you know, when I think of famous people, I always want to know what their advanced degrees are.
absolutely agree with this one. And it probably gives away something on my list later. But, yeah, I mean, you can't disagree with that. She was
the Celebrity Apprentice was huge.
Yep.
For her. And not just because that she was on it, but she made it all the way to the end. And then she had that real famous talk with Joan Rivers, where Joan Rivers was talking about how all poker players are child rapists or something. Well, she didn't say that, but she should have. And I think that really, really exposed poker in general to a whole new audience, and certainly through Annie.
And here's something else, too, that he didn't bring up. how often, when I interviewed her here at Derby Lane, she said that the only thing she plays anymore are charity events because she's so busy with them. And when you think about who plays in a charity event, it's not just players. It's people who want to support the charity. How many times have you and I played in charity events and we're people who have no idea how to play? They're just supporting their church or their cause or whatever. And so she's opening it up. People find out, oh, there's Annie Duke. She's at the event that I'm at. And, oh, that's how I know her. So, yeah, so even through poker, she's bringing it to the masses. So I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
All right, Phil Ivey. I wasn't sure if that was going to be on a list or not. He's definitely famous in the poker world. Rich from Joliet says, this guy literally is a Tiger Woods of poker. He had a stereotype shattering presence that caught people's attention. He says he knows back in 2003 he was expecting to see Al Capone, speakeasy types, and colorful Wild Bill personalities. Of course, his incredible play in the years following the 2003 boom and the overwhelming recognition granted to him by the other top pros as the best player in the world has made this Phil a celebrity without the stage performances. So, absolutely, in the poker world, I don't think there's one person that wouldn't recognize him these days. But in the overall world, I think Phil Ivey, you know, would not be recognized.
Well, I have to share a story that I was telling on Short Stack last night about this. You know, a couple of years ago, the Super Bowl was here in Tampa.
Yes.
I'm sure you remember because you probably never got a minute off work during that whole thing.
Yes.
But one of my favorite stories there was reporters were chasing these rumors that Tiger Woods was in town for the Super Bowl. And so they're trying to find him and stuff. And then, of course, you're on the wire and Tiger Woods is like in Asia playing some tournament or something. So he can't be in Tampa. Turns out, that what people eventually thought, I don't know if it was ever confirmed, it was Phil Ivey.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here's the thing. You got somebody that looks like Tiger Woods, so therefore he's famous. But if you don't know who you really are, are you really the famous person?
That's a good point, man.
I mean, walk down the street, people go, oh my God, Blair Rodman's here. Does that make me famous? Because I'm not Blair Rodman. I just look a little better than he does.
Hey, stop giving yourself compliments on our show. That's my job. Well, we also have another category, celebrities.
Uh-huh.
And we'll kick it off with Chicago Brian saying, Gabe Kaplan's acting career made him famous, and he continues in poker media today. Much of the nation, young and old, knows Gabe. Yeah, that's pretty true. I think if Gabe Kaplan walked into your poker room, you would know who he was. And if you walked into your library while you were there studying for your math doctorate like Annie Duke, I think you would know who he was. So I have to agree. I think Gabe Kaplan is pretty famous, and he is. I think he's more a poker player now than he is a performer. So
yeah. And Christopher Grimm wrote in to add, you know, people like Ray Romano and Jason Alexander. It's an interesting subgroup of this, and we'll get into that when we get to my list too. Of you know, going back to what you said, what's the definition of a poker player?
Exactly.
I mean, Barack Obama, a poker player. Is Jason Alexander a poker player? Certainly these people are. I mean, you're never going to say Jason Alexander's not. He's played at the World Series like 12 years in a row now.
Yeah.
Takes it fairly seriously. But is he a poker player in the terminology of what you think of it is?
Right.
Or is he just famous because of Seinfeld and the fact that he's playing poker?
Yep. I totally agree. I think that it's interesting. Like, you know, I think Gabe plays more poker than acting, but the other two, they just show up when it's convenient and they love to play, but I don't consider them poker players. I consider them actors who play poker. Same thing with Obama. I mean, I consider him a politician who plays poker, not a poker player who, you know, is in politics. So, all right, Mike Sexton. Michael Young says he announces very well and comes off very positive. He definitely is the ambassador of the poker world. When people think of who represents the game, they think of Mike Sexton. But again, I don't think if Mike Sexton walked into your church, you would know who he was.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give him a little bit of credit because the WPT was really promoting him for a while on all their little commercials, which were airing on non-poker programming while they're airing on ESPN.
Right.
Now they switched to Kimberly Lansing, so I don't think you ever see Sexton on anything now.
Right.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm a little surprised that he made the list.
Me too.
Yeah. All right, Scotty Wynn. O'Malley says his drunken display still didn't sit right with me. This is part of his list of infamous poker players, I think.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out what's going on there. I didn't know. But yeah, again, it's still more poker related. You know, it's completely poker related. Anybody who saw the drunken display only saw it because they were watching poker. And if they're watching poker, then they're not the average person. So we're going with the ubiquitous kind of list here. So again, I think Scotty Wynn is very famous in the poker world, and every poker player knows him, but in the real world, no. All right, the next category is pretty funny. Dead guys. I don't know why we have it as a category, but our good friend...
Yeah, Big Guru. He's like, you know, hey.
He says, what about dead famous poker players? You see, when you die, you stop playing poker, so I think there has to be special circumstances to keep being a famous poker player in death. I think the only famous poker player who is dead is Stu Unger, with honorable mention to Chip Reese and Johnny Moss. Well, Wild Bill Hickok's pretty famous.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about him in a minute. Yeah. But I like this. This is, I mean, think about this. If any kind of, who's the most famous guitarist, famous violinist, famous track star?
Right.
You know, it's current. People think of what's right on the top of their head now. So if you died in 1806, you're probably not in the consciousness right now. So if you are, then you must have been really famous, because now people are still talking about you years after you died.
Good point. That's a good point. I think I have a dead person on one of my lists. At least one dead person. Maybe two. Maybe three.
Well, you know, that Stu Unger, again, is not one of those people that transcends.
Right.
You know, he's got a couple of these movies out about his life that no one watched. Even poker players didn't watch them.
Exactly. Go to Home Depot today and go to the person who checks you out and say, hey, you know who Stu Unger is? And when they say no, you'll have your answer.
Oh, they're going to say, hey, he was on The Odd Couple, wasn't he?
That's right. That's his brother Felix.
And, you know, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Chip Reese and miss him a lot. But,
yep.
You know, no way anybody knows him.
No.
And Johnny Moss, even less.
No, even less, especially since he's been dead 30 years.
But then he mentioned, obviously, the most famous dead player is Stu Unger. I think Chicago Brian has a good comeback to that. And he says Wild Bill Hickok.
Yeah, yeah.
He says his aces and eights made him, in his hand, the most famous poker incident in history. And who can forget when Bugs Bunny won with his famous seven aces hand against Yosemite Sam? I defy you to find someone who doesn't know Bugs Bunny.
See? It just depends on who poker players are. It opens it up to a whole new spectrum.
Well, this is a really interesting one to me, too, because this kind of, like, straddles that line that we're talking about a famous person who plays poker and a poker player who's famous.
Right.
Because I think you could put Wild Bill in both categories.
Yeah.
I think poker players would say, oh, yeah, he's a poker player, even though I think the only hand we ever know he ever played was this one that he got waxed on. But, obviously, he's a well-known historical figure outside the realm of poker, just for being, you know, a Wild West kind of guy.
Totally agree. 100%. I think that he's like kind of like Doyle. He's got a hand named after him. He played during a time where it was very dangerous, and people still know or still bring him up 100 years later. And I think that he falls into the poker player, and that's why he's famous, because he was, you know, he was known for his poker playing and his sidearm. So very interesting.
Point, I wonder if Mark Twain would show up on the list.
Yeah, that's
for both gamblers.
That's
you know?
A good
again. I'm going back to this Family Feud thing, and I'm thinking about some of the older generation who they would say.
Yeah.
And they're probably not going to say Doyle Brunson unless they're a poker player, but they're going to search and think about lore, the stuff they read, Riverboat Gamblers or the Old West, and with a name that they can think of. So, yeah.
Well, I'm really starting to think O'Malley missed the whole point of this
well,
thing.
Well, no, I'll defend O'Malley here. He broke it into a bunch of lists like you did, and I just obliterated it for our own
personal here. I'll just tease it up. But he brings up Phil, oh my God, Clay Aiken, Galfond. I don't even think people know who Clay Aiken is. Never mind Phil Galfond. He says, I'm not sure why, but I doubt he's on many top lists, so why the hell not? So he just brought him up to say what the hell. I think that his name resonates within the poker world, definitely. But again, I think he's definitely somebody you could even bring to a poker room and no one would know who he was.
I would not know him.
Well, not no one, but a lot of people wouldn't know who he was.
I would not recognize him, and I would not recognize the next one, which might be a little shock to some of our listeners. Tom Durdwan.
Wow.
Chicago Brian says he made a splash as a young phenom genius who took to crushing the live high-stakes TV games as well. I will admit, I've never seen Tom Dwan play.
Wow. Yeah.
Because he made a splash on TV after I kind of was over the whole poker TV boom.
Yep, that's right.
And I know a lot of our listeners, you obviously watched all this before and know everything about him. But I'm searching my brain. I don't think I've ever, maybe once, I've seen him play on TV.
Yeah, that's right. And, I think he is very famous in the poker world. His name, maybe, certainly, is what's more famous than his look or his image. Again, if we're following our rules, he's not famous in your, delicatessen. But if we follow the poker world rules, he's very famous in the poker world. I don't think he's top five famous. I think you need to recognize him, too. And I think a lot of people wouldn't know who he was if he sat down at the 2-4 stud table at Tampa Bay Downs or something. So, I think he's very famous, but I don't think he's famous enough to make the list. Okay, our next one is Howard Lederer.
Yeah, part of this infamous list.
Right. Nick Besser said, because he was the founder of one of the biggest poorly run companies in the world, we as a poker community are still talking about him. I'm surprised he didn't ask the U.S. government for a bailout. Pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
Oh, I'll give him joke points there, but yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I don't think anybody outside the poker world knows who he is, and they never will now because you'll probably never see his face ever again.
Yeah, that's right.
He's probably hanging out in Bangladesh right now. Victor Blom, Chicago Prize, says the name Isildur won strikes fear in anyone willing to click a mouse to lose a house or two.
Yeah, we can just move on because nobody even knows who Victor Blom is, even the real world or the poker world. So Isildur won is very famous, but
Isildur is a better name, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess, but it's not even close to me, right? All right, Johnny Chan, which I like. I kind of agree with this.
I think this had to be on the list.
Rich from Joliet says his fame traces to back before the 2003 TV poker boom, which was driven by the World Series on ESPN, but he crossed that threshold and blazed along on through to today. That year, several of the top pros that nobody really knew about got lots of camera time, backstories, and anecdotes given by Norman Lahn. He was also featured in Rounders, which augmented his mystique as the best. Add his bracelet accomplishments, dominance on additional TV poker events like Poker Stars on Fox Sports and Poker After Dark, and you have a lasting poker celebrity burn into our consciousness. I mean, come on, he's Johnny Effin Chan. I'm going to agree with this one, but not from an overall standpoint. But I do agree with it from the poker world. I think there are very few people who wouldn't recognize his face if they walked into a poker room or a poker player saw him at the store.
I think you would recognize him. And one of the points I make is that part of his allure is his outfits, the colorful outfits he wears, the fact that most of his TV time he was carrying on that orange.
Yep.
So, he had a prop, as long as you have a prop, people are going to remember that. So, if you did him, and this is funny too, because we, Laura and I go to this restaurant, and every month they have a little contest where they have I think it's 12 faces. On a piece of paper, and you have to pick who they are, right?
Yeah.
And then the person who gets the most by the end of the month gets a free pizza or something, right? It's a lot harder than you would think when all you have to go on is just the face, because a lot of these people you associate with their clothes or their hats or in an environment.
The right environment.
And I think Johnny's the same way, but the whole total picture, if I see someone walking into a poker room with a white and blue flowing shirt and an orange... Hey, it's Johnny freaking Chan. But I want to ask you about this, because I know you're on the list of huge Rounders fans. You're number one. All the way down, the number two is probably Ed Norton. Obviously, this is what we're talking about, transcending poker and Rounders as a mainstream hit. But it was also 13 years ago. Movie came out in 98, right?
Right.
Obviously, it's still on HBO and DVD and stuff, so it's not like people aren't watching it anymore. And all of us here in the poker world love the movie because it's as close as we've gotten to a realistic poker movie, right?
Right.
Certainly, considering all this other crap that's out there now. But I don't remember how popular this movie actually was to the masses. And if it was that popular, whether it remains that popular 13 years later. So are people really going to remember Johnny Chan's cameo in a movie 13 years ago about a poker movie 13 years ago?
Probably not. I think that his spot on the movie, too, was so brief. you know, there's the one video where he's watching and the girl walks in, and then there's the part where, you know, he recollects that he played against him in AC or something. So, no, I have to agree with you. I think that now that poker's famous and Rounder starts to get played more on TV, I have to admit, I've seen it on TV a lot in the last 7 years. And even if you start back to 2004, 2005, that's still 5 or 6 years after the movie actually came out that, you know, they started to show the reruns of it, and even more so once poker got famous again. So I have to agree with you. I don't think that his appearances on there is enough to make him, you know, the star.
Well, the other thing, too, is, I mean, we know that he's a real poker player, and it's Johnny Chan, right?
Right.
When you're watching a movie, you don't know that he's not just another one of the characters like Teddy KGB, right?
Yeah, exactly. You don't actually know that.
As a layperson, is a
real.
Know that, right?
Yeah, you don't know that he's a real. Unless you follow poker, you don't know he's a real play, a real world champion. Even that World Series video you're watching could have been staged just because they liked the actor who could have played
right.
that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, no, absolutely. I don't think it's enough to pull the general public into. In just because he didn't spend enough time on the screen and there wasn't enough information about it. I mean, he even talks about Doyle Brunson in the opening credits, but I don't think that's enough to make the layman know who he is just on that fact alone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it has to be Doyle's hat, it has to be his world champions, it has to be his appearances on other things that make him famous. So, yeah, I agree with you. I don't think the movie's enough.
All right, well, I guess it's time for our list, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to thank everybody for sending in those lists, because very
great,
interesting angles and thought processes had to go to make up that list.
All right, well, I'll start off here. I'm going to put Doyle Brunson on my list, mostly because of his books. And I realize that's probably a little bit of a stretch, but the whole, it gives the whole package, the cowboy hat, the name, and I think he'll probably make that list. Second on the list, and I'm shocked that I'm the only one that mentioned this, Chris Moneymaker.
I don't think so.
I mean,
so.
The guy got a ton of press after he won his World Series title. Now, granted, that was 8 years ago and hasn't really done much outside of the poker world since then. But, you know, his name, I mean, come on. I mean, everybody's going to remember the. I mean, he was a media darling there. Here's a guy that took $40 and turned it into $2 million. And, of course, oh my God, his name is Moneymaker.
Well, let me ask you this. You talked a little bit before about recognizing someone when you see them. I don't think the general public walking down the street is going to know Chris Moneymaker.
Oh, gosh,
seen
no,
him.
No, not right. that. But, the ultimate question is, who are the famous poker players?
Right.
And I'm thinking more of people are going to rattle off a name, not so much pick them out of the lineup. That's how I went with my list. I mean, other lists might be different. But I would think that name sticks in your head if you're a non-poker player.
Yeah.
Who's that guy that turned 40? Oh, yeah, Moneymaker. Yeah, how can I forget that name?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I just wonder. You know, I don't know. I wonder if there's someone more famous than him that makes the list over your other four.
Yeah. All right. Probably next, we'll probably put maybe Phil Hellmuth on there. You know, certainly his antics. Again, you have to be watching poker to see that for the most part. But I think it's one of those things where... even today, I mean, poker's on in bars a lot, particularly ESPN. And even if you're not paying attention, you're in the middle of a conversation, all of a sudden you see somebody stand up and flip a chair over and scream and stuff. You start to pay attention, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that kind of helps transcend a little bit. And certainly he is the master of self-promotion. Whether that gets out into the poker world, I don't know. But that's what makes it so hard.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. That's
I really
why...
couldn't. Defend to the death anybody on my list, to be honest.
That's why I had to crack and come up with three lists, because I don't even think Hellmuth is part of the ubiquitous either. I think he's more poker world, but I agree with you. It's not easy to do this list. It is not easy.
All right, and then, of course, Annie Duke, I think. In fact, she's probably number one on this list now just because of the Celebrity Apprentice. And you're right, the charity work, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's an important thing. You know,
yeah.
If you know, Mabel from the knitting club comes to the charity event, that's the only poker she plays all year, and Annie Duke's there. That's who she's going to remember, right? All right, the last spot. A lot of competition for here, and maybe some of these should have made it. Daniel Grano. I give him credit for his agent's work in getting him on mainstream TV. Like I mentioned, the Katy Perry video, some other stuff like that. Phil Ivey for the Tiger Woods references, but I think I talked myself out of that with that story. What about Vanessa Russo? No one mentioned her. You know, she's a GoDaddy girl, so she's, you know, outside of poker. She was in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. I mean, obviously it was a paid ad, but she was part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
got those good looks. I don't know.
That's a good point. I wonder. Now, I have to admit, I don't really recall ever seeing a Vanessa Russo GoDaddy commercial unless I was watching poker.
Yeah, that's good.
But that's not to say it's not true. I mean, you know, when it's a NASCAR race, they're going to have the what's her name?
Danica
Patrick. And then if it's poker, they're going to. So I don't really remember seeing a Vanessa Russo commercial after that. And I remember seeing the Sports Illustrated ad. And that's a good point, too, because Negreanu has also been, like, in the Poker Stars ad that was in ESPN the magazine and, you know, the other Sports Illustrated, things like that. So that's another way for Negreanu to get in the list. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Vanessa Russo is more popular enough. The name itself, I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, it's a tougher name, too.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we're trying to be, you know, this is just being honest, the lowest common denominator, too. I mean, and people are going to remember Scott Long. That's a tough name to forget, right?
Yeah.
Then it's Russo. Is it Russo or Rosso? Forget it.
Yeah.
I'll remember some other poker player. and then I got to consider, I think, these poker-playing celebrities. And I know this is controversial. Some people don't want to consider it. But again, I'm thinking, again, from the Family Feud question. And I think folks like Tobey Maguire, Ben Affleck are going to show up on that. So I'm going to say, if you put a big blind in my head, I'm going to have to go with Tobey Maguire just because of the recent Hollywood game coverage.
Yeah.
Ask me again in a month or 2 months, and he probably won't be on that list. Somebody else will be.
Yeah.
But right now, I think he's the celebrity. Oh, Spider-Man got dinged for playing poker.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good one. And again, it goes back to the what's a poker player. Right. You know, he definitely plays poker, but it's not his main source of income. But, yeah, I agree. I think Maguire probably is, of all the other than maybe Gabe Kaplan, he's probably the most famous Hollywood celebrity.
I don't know. I mean, Chicago's Brian Wright. I mean, if you're young or old, you know him. Either you know him from Welcome Back, Cotter, or you know him now from poker. But I don't know how many of the Welcome Back, Cotter fans know he's a poker player.
But they know him, right? If you went to,
well, they know him.
The question is, if you said his name.
If you say his name. See, that's how it all depends how you ask the question. If you ask, hey, just name me a famous poker player, they're not going to say Gabe Kaplan.
Right.
Or you're going to say, have you heard of Gabe Kaplan? Yeah, sure I have.
Yeah. See, there's so many ways to ask this question.
Oh, absolutely.
Because like you were saying before, if you say somebody who's Chris Moneymaker, they'll probably know he plays poker, but they won't recognize his face. Yep. And then somebody says, who's this guy right here? You'd be like, oh, that's Gabe Kaplan.
Yep.
But, you know, you don't know he's a poker player because you watched him on Welcome Back, Cotter, and you don't know anything about poker. So... But he's famous. I think he's more famous overall than any of these people. But
oh, certainly.
But is he a poker? You know, it's such a fun topic. I think Tobey Maguire is a pretty good pick. If you're going that way, I'm going to start with my list with the obvious ones that we just talked about: Annie Duke, virtue of her game show exploits. It wasn't just The Apprentice; she was also on that One Versus 100 and went really deep in it.
Yeah.
So that's two different types of variety game shows that she'd be
on. And we should mention that she's married to a TV producer that I think really has done wonders for getting her exposure.
Yeah, Joe.
So, I mean, he deserves some... Joe Elizabeth, I call him.
And Joe Reitman. I don't know if... Are they married or are they just dating?
I think they got engaged.
Did they get engaged? I'm not sure. So anyway, Annie Duke. Dan Negreanu, by virtue of his appearance in X-Men, Katy Perry video, and other things. He's even in Lucky You.
Yeah.
Plus the commercials and the charity events that he does too. Like he was even at the Hard Rock one here for the hockey one for what's his name? So Vinny LeCavalier. So you know people who were just playing the charity event would know him that way too if they were sitting at his table and had no idea who he was in the beginning. I know who he is now. So I think Negreanu, Doyle Brunson. I agree with his historic references too. Just the fact of how you know he is the godfather of poker. When people talk about poker and the greatest ever, you hear that. So I think he is. But now here are my two that might throw people for a loop. Gus Hansen. He was voted one of the sexiest men alive in People. How many people read People? See that ugly mug of his and think he's famous. So
Again, he's got that unique look.
Yeah, he's got that unique look.
Head and I mean, no offense to him because I'm certainly not sexy, but I'm not seeing it.
I know. Do I think that if you went down the street and said to one person, do you know who Chris Moneymaker is? There's a better chance I'll know who Moneymaker is than Gus Hansen.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was in People magazine, and for that alone, he gets my ubiquitous list.
Okay, all right.
And the final one, which I don't think a lot of people thought about, Amarillo Slim.
Yeah, Slim.
He was the most popular poker player on the planet back in the day. He was known for incredible prop bets.
Right.
And they were, most of them were televised. When he's going down the Rio Grande or whatever in a raft. He was on Michael Douglas. He was on the Johnny Carson Tonight Show. And even that's today, as a poker player, you still know who he is. There are some negative things about him. There are some positive things about him. He's a world champion. I think Amarillo Slim is if you heard Amarillo Slim, you would be like, I know who he is. He's a poker player. You know?
Well, that's a great one too, because I think it goes back to the generational thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you ask, I'd love to see three lists. You know, I like to see like an AARP list, like a baby boomer Gen X list, and then like a 20-somethings list.
Yeah.
Because they would be vastly different.
Yep.
You know, I think that 20-something list would be most of these celebrities we're talking about, like Tobey Maguire's, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, Adam, in the middle could be all kinds of stuff. But you're right, on the senior citizen list, you're back then, I mean, people forget about this. We do, because we were, you know,
toddlers.
Twinkle in our parents' eyes.
I was a toddler.
But you didn't have the media overload that you did back then.
Right.
You know, you had three channels on TV. So, you know, somebody like an Amarillo Slim was able to really rise above and become the poker player.
Yep.
Back then, I would think.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
Whereas now, you know, you have all these people. I mean, a lot of the stuff is just because there's just 200 cable channels to choose from and 4,000 websites, and your news is fractured and stuff. But back then, you're right. I mean, I think you had one person that everybody knew in every arena somewhere. Boxing, golf, tennis, poker, and he was it.
Yep.
You're right. That's a good
Absolutely.
One. Very good one.
Well, the other two lists I had, Poker World. I'll just go on the list real quick. Phil Hellmuth, Doyle Brunson, Dan Negreanu, Dan Harrington for his books. I think that as far as in the poker world, everybody knows Harrington on Hold'em. And so they know Dan Harrington. So, and plus the three deep runs he had in the World Series, right, including winning one, and his other bracelets. So, and then Johnny Chan, I think for all of his titles. He's an icon, I'm sure, in China. And then Rounders.
He's on the yen.
Yeah, he's on the yuan. I think those five guys in the poker world, probably the most famous people in poker, in my opinion, as far as people knowing who they are. And then I had all time in all walks. I wanted to have this list. Edward G. Robinson.
Okay.
Wild Bill Hickok.
Uh-huh.
Doyle Brunson. Captain Hawkeye Pierce. You know, more people watch the MASH finale than any other show in the history of the world. Yeah. So everybody knows who Hawkeye Pierce is. And I had a tie for my fifth one, Richard Nixon, Barack Obama.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how many people really remember that Nixon funded his congressional campaign on his poker winnings, but...
Yeah, I know.
But, might, you know. It'd be different if he...
But again, he played poker, and we know he played poker, and we know he did it.
I mean, probably then, more famous is Harry Truman. He was playing poker when he found out that he was president.
Yeah, pass the buck. Very interesting category. It's no wonder it took us so long to put this together, because it's so captivating and difficult to really come up with a list.
And what I think is funny about this whole thing is I originally had this as one of our banner items right after it happened. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, you know what? I think we could do a whole show. And it turns out we could do a whole four shows on this.
I know. It's pretty wild. Get a little history lesson for the Antiup Nation.
This is Doyle Brunson, and you're listening to Antiup.
All right, we got another new listener on the Hand of the Week this week, Chris.
Cool.
Scott Barrett from, let me scroll down, Manlius, New York.
Okay.
No pronunciation guy. Manlius. Manlius?
That sounds about right.
Manlius?
Manlius.
Manlius. Well, that's easier to say. We're going to go with that. Manlius.
Manlius.
He found us about 6 months ago. Really enjoys listening until we just butchered his name. Now he probably hates us. And he said, especially the journey that Scott and Chris have made or made are making from our work together at TBT to going on your own.
Yeah.
That's great. He found us 6 months ago and he already knows the 3 years
the backstory.
Of history.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. All right, so here we go. 1-2 no limit. Playing in his local casino, which happens to be Turning Stone up in New York.
Okay.
Now, he does admit he's a fairly new player, and he's been playing for about a year now. All right?
Okay.
He was on his second buy-in of the evening. First was $200, the second was $150, and he's down to $50.
Wow.
But he hasn't worked his way up, so.
Okay. A real story. A real story, yeah.
A real story. The last honest poker player in the world. he said he went on a 2 to 3 hour streak of really good cards, and as luck would have, the table had evolved to pretty passive, and he built a 50 to just over 500.
Oh, man. You set me up there,
real
didn't
jid,
you?
Real jid.
Set me up there.
All right, so he's got the 500 clams in front of him. Wow, let's see. What do you say here? He says, mostly with 3 to 4 limpers in front, he would raise to 10 to 12 bucks in position with a wide range, and then C bet, which is continuation bet, which means to bet on the flop, for you new poker players. So you're trying to avoid the lingo now, right?
Good job.
And or bet made hands to take down lots of pots. Most players were only limping, and a raise from me in position would typically get at the heads up on the flop. Rarely would someone play back. When I did show down, I was showing mostly strong hands. Out of position, I was much more selective what I would play, but I was probably seen as a bit of a bully, I guess.
Okay.
Right, so that was his backstory there. All right, he was about to call it quits for the evening, and nothing good ever happens after that. And of course he says, or so I say now. When he entered this hand, under the gun, raised to 6, and he says this is a typical raise at the table, or I'm sorry, the typical raise at the table is 10 to 12.
Okay.
This guy only raises to 6. He says his under the gun was the former table chip leader and a solid player. He's thoughtful and capable of laying down a hand, but also had made a couple of shocking, amazing calls on the river when his opponents were bluffing. Which all goes back to being a solid player, right?
Yeah, right.
His stack had dwindled, in quotes, from about 650 to 440 over the past 2 hours, but was probably the best player at the table. All right, I don't like this guy at all.
I'm not happy we're in a hand with him as our last hand of the night or whatever.
In fact, actually, if I'm thinking about calling it quits in the end, the best player at the table raises under the gun to 6 when the typical raise is 10 to 12, I am out.
Yeah.
Faster than I'm folding before it even gets to me. Sir, you gotta fold in position. Oh, no way, man. I'm not gonna be even thundered to get in this hand. All right, well, we're on the button with Queen of Diamonds, Deuce of Diamonds.
Yeah, what the hell? This is the hand?
We can't make this stuff up.
We rallied from 50 bucks after being down 300 to get to 500, and we're sticking around with Queen Deuce against a tough player under the gun who min raises, essentially? Oh, man. Why are we playing this hand?
Yep, see?
This let's. I want to end the show right now.
We let our lessons out in the world so other people don't make the same mistakes, right?
Yeah, I know, but we
Scott is adding to that lore here on Annie Up, and we appreciate him.
We've entertained the nation enough today. Show's over. I'm Chris Cosenza. Well, again, he says he's only been playing for a year, so maybe he needs to learn a lesson here and get away from this hand. There's just no reason to play it. What really are you hoping to have? Ace, king of diamonds on the flop? What, the five of diamonds? Yeah, there. It's not too specific, is it?
Really no reason to play this.
No.
Just fold it around to you, and then you're raising to steal the blinds.
Exactly.
That's the only time I could ever defend myself playing queen deuce, unless I'm in the blind and it's not raised.
Yeah, I just can't. I can't see the reason to play this hand.
Or it's mid raised, and I just want to give you a big F you, like you know, flopping quads or something.
Yeah, there's just no reason to play this hand ever, really, right, unless you're in
now,
the blinds.
Scott says, "I know, Chris. I know." Actually, he doesn't say Chris. He just says, "I know. I should not be playing this hand." But he figures if I hit it hard, and hard is in all caps, so you know he means it. Hmm. I can play, and if not, I can get away.
But he was wrapping up the night. That's the perfect night to just chuck it and go. There's no reason to hit it hard. And if you hit it hard, there's always a way to lose. You know, the only way you can hit this hard if it's queen, 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 or deuce, 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 and that's like 1 in 70,000. So just let it go.
And again, he's a new player, so we're not going to be too harsh on him, but this is the kind of questions we get in our Poker 101 classes, right?
Yeah.
And what I explain to people is, what is hitting this hand hard?
Yeah, exactly.
What is hitting this hand hard?
Right.
Two pair, not hard. Sorry. Very vulnerable. Yeah. Quads, sure. All right, 1 in 5,000 years of playing, you're going to hit quads with this hand. A flush? It better have an ace and a king on the board, or otherwise it's not a good enough flush in my book.
That's right.
Straight, you're not going to be able to just straight on the flop, and it's going to be kind of weird. I mean, it's going to take a lot of work to get there. I don't think there's any way, aside from the Sasquatchian rarity of quads, that you can hit this flop hard.
No. 100% agree.
So, don't even think about it.
No. Okay, so we know that any analysis from here on in is just taking it from where we stand in the hand and not what we would have done because we would have let this hand go a long time ago.
Absolutely. And I think Scott knows that, too.
Okay, good.
All right. So we call. The blinds call. $24 in the pot to the flop. Flop is queen of spades, queen of diamonds, queen of clubs. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know.
Queen of spades, seven of hearts, deuce of clubs. All right, so top and bottom pair. Pretty good, our hero thinks. You're wrong. The blind checks. The blinds check. Under the gun bets 15. It's a standard continuation question mark. So I don't know if he's asking us whether that's a standard continuation bet or if he's saying it is. But it's a little bit more than half the pot, so I would say it's a decent bet, right?
Yeah, that's the right amount, probably, if you're continuation betting. Now, you got to remember something for me, Scott. My memory is not that good on this. When we had TJ on our cruise,
mm-hmm.
and he was talking about it, and he said, what hand loses the most money in poker? Was it the bottom two pair?
Bottom two pair.
Bottom two pair,
but I'm
okay.
sure the next one is top and bottom.
It's top and bottom, yeah. Now,
and
of
again,
course,
the reason is because you can get counterfeited.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty quickly.
Let's say
we talked about this on a previous show. I mean,
right.
Not too long ago, right?
Hand absolutely right. It's almost exactly the same hand, because if somebody has aces and the deuce and a seven comes, now you've got queens and sevens with no kicker, and he's got aces and sevens, and you can't win unless a queen comes. So this is not a very strong hand. It's a good hand. It's a hand probably no one would put you on, but the counterfeit part of this makes it so difficult to really invest a lot of money in. I mean, at this point, yeah, we have two pair and we're happy with it, and we probably are ahead. The only hands we're really behind are sets, and two of those sets are very unlikely, and even yeah. sevens, min-raising, almost min-raising, I guess he went three times, but under the gun with that, I just don't feel like that's the hand he has. So I think we're ahead now.
Yeah, I think we're ahead, and I think if we can end the hand now, we should, but we have to know if we can end it.
Yeah. That's the thing.
I mean, if we're putting in a bet of 100 and we're not ending it, that's a problem, I think.
Right. So you're thinking about making it like 60 to go because you really want to end it, but you like
your
hand.
Yeah, I don't know the table. I mean, obviously, we just know what he has here. I know I'm up against a solid player who just made an odd raise preflop and is now betting a fairly standard continuation here. I got to know, based on the time I've been there, what it's going to take to get this guy to fold.
Yeah. Now, if this guy has aces,
and
he's not going anywhere.
And if he has pocket queens or aces or kings, he's not going to fold here. So that's another problem, I think.
I guess
that's what I'm saying. Is if I don't think this guy's going to fold, boy, I don't know.
The other thing, too, is given the fact that he has centered a lot of his commentary here on this one guy, I'm assuming the blinds aren't going to get involved because that's sort of an unfair misdirection on his part to us if somehow we're not led to believe that the small blind and the big blind are the type of people that would limp or call a small raise with pocket deuces or pocket sevens.
Right. Yeah.
So if I'm still thinking that the guy under the gun is the one combatant I have to worry about, then I think I need to try to end the hand here. Or if he has aces, you're going to get it in as a favorite, but just know that the counterfeit ability is there. I think I'm going to have to raise now. I'm sick of it. I don't want to be in this hand. I don't care that I flopped two pair. I wish I didn't play this hand. Because this is, like you said, is not hitting it hard. It's just hitting it conveniently to lose all your chips. So, but if I'm going to play this hand, I have to admit, I want to see this guy as ace-king. If he has jacks, if he has, you know, I want to see what he's going to do when I raise it. And I'm definitely going to raise it because I don't want the blinds to stick around. Even though queen-seven-deuce-rainbow is the absolute ideal flop for every single hand you could possibly own in the world because you can't make any straights on the next card. You can't make any flushes.
Right.
But a lot of times when I'm trying to dream up scenarios for hands and stuff, I'm always putting queen-seven-deuce in there, and it's not right. You shouldn't do that because it's the most safe one where no one can argue with your play because, you know, nothing can happen on the turn the way you bet. So I'm going to make it like 50 to go.
All right. Yeah, you know, I'm in a pickle here. This is just not how... I'm just not a good no-limit player to know how to do what to do here. I mean, again, I wouldn't have played it from the beginning. And I meant it when I said, you know, I need to make a bet that I think can take it down here.
Yeah.
And if I'm not confident I can make that bet, I'm probably going to be very weak and just check and just hope to keep the pot small and that it holds up. But you're right. You make a good point. I can't check here and then leave the blinds in because now I'm drawing against three people.
Or just call because you bet 15.
Or call, I mean,
Yeah, no, exactly, because you don't know what the blinds have.
So I'm in a pickle. So I guess I'm going to have to raise here. Maybe I'm gonna try to raise the minimum that I think will get everybody to fold, and if I get called, then I'm going to have to reassess after that, or if I get raised, then that's fine.
Yeah, because if somebody has eights and you just call, if somebody in the blinds has eights, they may call because they may think that the guy c-bet that you don't have anything and that their eights are better than the sevens or the deuces that are could be possible. So I think that someone with eights or nines might even call here because they may have just called a raise in the blinds with those hands hoping to set mine.
Sure, yeah.
So I definitely want to make a raise here. So how much do you think you would raise?
I'll probably go 45 because 30 is just a min bet. That's not going to get you anything. I guess the extra $10 will, extra $15 will do something.
That's, okay. So we're of like mind. I said 15, yeah. You said 45. So I think we're of like mind. 3x of what he bet.
But I'm not convinced that's going to get that's probably going to get the blinds out. But I'm not convinced that's going to get the other gun out. So
if I don't really know if I necessarily want him out if he's got aces and he's drawing to two aces and right now let's say it's three sevens, okay. I don't want him out. But the problem is that you know it's hand of the week and we know where it's going somehow.
And I should explain this too because I'm sure there's some blood boiling to some listeners here about. Getting him out. I want to get him out because I know my hand is vulnerable and I'm playing against a player that's better than me.
Yeah.
So it's not optimal, I admit, and if we're playing two computer opponents, it's not what you want to do. But I'm just being realistic about my ability against this guy and my holding right now.
That's a good point.
Take the pot right now, even though I could probably make more value by stringing him along and trying to outplay him.
That's a good point.
I think you have to be honest with your ability sometimes.
I mean, if you think about it, it's still a nice $40 pot.
Yeah,
you know?
and that would be enough to get you to say, hey, this is my last hand. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, I dodged a bullet. I took money off of this good player. I am out of here.
Yeah.
Going to see the Muppet movie.
okay, so we kind of agree about how much to bet. What did he do?
All right, he raises to 40.
Well,
but not bad.
It's not a bad play. It's probably right. I mean, not right, but I mean, it's within the realm of what we think should happen here. I just don't know if it's enough to get out a stubborn blind player.
All right. Well, the blinds do fold.
Okay.
And the other guy under the gun player thinks for a while and raises 3x to 120. Now what? With two question marks and one exclamation point.
Well, I have to admit that I'm not above folding here.
Not at all. I mean, this is what I'm saying. I wanted to end it. I give him credit for only betting 40 when I would have bet 45, so that's an extra $5. I can go to Subway now with what he just saved me. It sounds like a weak play to fold, but again, you got to remember who you're up against and the situation you're in.
Yeah.
Took a shot to take it down here, and you didn't, so now you're going to put another 80 in, and then you've got two more streets to come. Of big bets, likely.
At this point,
you're going to have to hope that a queen or deuce comes, and then, you know, that's a lot of money to put in for 4 outs.
The other thing, too, is that we have to start thinking about what he said in the beginning of the hand about the personas that they had. And if he had the persona of being a bully, then the under the gun raiser could literally think that his aces are good and that you're just trying to push him off the hand. But the other thing
is... It's really expensive to find that out, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be really expensive to find that out. And the other thing, too, is it feels a lot like aces, kings, or pocket sevens. And again, in the beginning, I didn't think pocket sevens would have made the raise he did. But again, he's tricky. Maybe he did. Maybe he wanted to get... Maybe that's why he min-raised, because he wanted to get a few... Not min-raised, but I keep saying that, but it's... At this table, it was like a min-raise. But maybe he wanted to get like 4 or 5 callers to try to hit a set mine and make it worth the price. I don't know. But it's starting to feel like, I mean, it could be the overwhelmingly rare pocket queens, but even then, why would he raise? He has no reason to raise here because the turn can't hurt.
I don't think he has any reason to raise with pocket sevens either, does he?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, because there's nothing that can hurt him on the turn. If he's as savvy as he is, then it feels like an overpair.
Might as well say, oh, hey, you got it? Cool, and then check the turn and let us hang ourselves and...
Yeah, it feels a lot like...
I don't see any reason to raise here with those hands. So that's an interesting piece of information, I think. So now is it like ace-queen, maybe?
Yeah, that's a good question.
In which case, we're ahead, but vulnerable.
I just wonder if he... Why would he re-raise with ace-queen? You know, he literally could be behind here, so he would just probably call to keep the pot smaller. If he's as good as he says, raising doesn't do anything.
If we're a bully, again, I like that you're bringing that up. You know, hey, I'm going to bully you back, and then I'm not going to have to worry about whether my top is going to hold up.
Yeah.
We'll just get your... money, your $40 that you just put in there blindly for me, and I'll be happy.
Well, that could be a holding. That could be a holding. That could be the thing where we get counterfeited later, too, where it goes seven. you know, and then you've got queens and sevens with an ace, and he's got it, and you've got queens and sevens with a deuce. So that's a good point too. So it feels like it's a hand that's beating us or could beat us very easily. And so I don't know. This is why I think I would let it go. You know, I put my 45 in to see where I am, and yeah, if I was firmly believing that he had kings or aces, I would probably just call and see the turn. If the turn's not a seven, then I'm letting it go. I'm betting big.
Well, this is another hand in the psychology of poker too, and that I know our hand of the week only people will be upset when I say this, but you got to think about the psychology of the whole thing. It's your last hand of the night. You're getting brutalized here. You put 350 in, you're down to 50, and now you're back up to 500. Even with the 45 you put in here, it's still a winning day, right?
Yeah, essentially.
And sure, it's going to hurt to fold this knowing you just threw 45 bucks away for no reason. But it's going to hurt a lot more to get your stack in here and lose it on the last day and go home and think, God, why did I play Queen Deuce? Why did I do that? And it's going to mess you up for quite a while going forward, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I'm not above folding here.
I think I could fold here and still learn the lesson and go home and think, God, why did I play Queen Deuce? Cost me $45. And then use that and come back stronger next time. If I get felted here playing that, it's going to destroy my confidence as a new player, I think.
I guess we have to get back to, ultimately, if we're going to try to become a better player and we had to play this hand somehow, and still be a better player.
Somebody had a gun to the back of our head.
Right, exactly. There's only one hand that reasonably we are losing to right now. And if we're going to be a better player and we're comfortable with losing our two buy-ins, because that's what you should be doing when you're playing poker like this,
right?
Then I think that if I had this much time to analyze, because you and I have spent 25 minutes on this hand, and I don't think I could do that at the table, but if I was comfortable enough to realize that pocket sevens is the only hand that's we're ahead of, and that pocket sevens wouldn't raise here because they have no reason to, then
pocket queens at that point. I don't think pocket queens should be raising here either.
So. Right, and I think
you're right.
But as far as a reasonable hand for him to be holding here, I don't think a set of queens or a set of deuces is really reasonable since we have a queen and deuce in our hand. I'm just thinking of the actual hand that is likely here is aces or kings. And if that's the case, then I think that I'm going to put it all in and then hope the board doesn't pair. Because if I'm thinking like him and I'm happy that I've gotten, you know, my money built up, I can show that I can build my money back up, and I was $50 away from being broke 20 minutes ago, here's my chance to take down a really big pot and be home a bunch of money, or to learn from this to not play Queen Deuce. I see what you're saying. You want to get away and be a winner for the night.
Yeah.
But if you really want to be a better player, the hand that he can only have here that beats you really is pocket sevens, and even that is weird because he wouldn't really raise with this hand because there's nothing can beat him on the turn except, you know, if he's thinking we don't have queens, because why would we raise with queens? So
yeah.
I don't know. I think a good point.
I think it's got to be one or the other. It's either you got to be fold and just lick your runes, or if you go all in here, if he has aces and kings, if he's a good player, he can't call that.
Right.
He's got to put you on the set at that point, and you know he's not going to want to give up $500 here.
Right. He's a good player.
Right. So he'd be like, fine, whatever. And then you've just taken 120 off of him. So that's probably the best play. And if he does call, then you're right. You've got to fade some stuff there, but
yeah, you got to fade a seven if he has aces or kings. You got to fade an ace, a king, or any running pairs, which is tough. But I don't know. I think that if I'm really thinking hard about it, I don't think this guy has a set of anything. Now, he could have a set. It could be very rare, and as we always say, you know, chalk it up to variance or whatever. But the only reasonable hand that's ahead of us is because queen seven isn't making it six to go under the gun.
No.
So it's pocket sevens. And again, we don't think there's a reason for pocket sevens to raise. If
we
this
do
guy
have
been
the sevens too, right?
Yeah.
When queen comes, we have a bigger boat.
Yeah. So
deuce is going to help us.
But deuce is not going to help us, but
we got two outs again.
We got two outs in case
he's playing that hand strong.
So, hell, I'm going to throw caution to the wind and the flamers, and I'm going to shove.
Yeah, I might have talked myself into shoving here, too. Boy, that's going to hurt if we're wrong.
It's going to hurt. We know we're wrong because it's hand of the week. Something's going to happen to make us lose unless he calls and doesn't get the guy out
of
hand.
That's fascinating. I didn't think about that in responding to him. I mean, really, that's why I like doing these discussions. I mean, I was all set to fold, and then you start thinking about it, and you're like, you know what? A shove here is probably more effective.
Yeah. It's one or the other. I mean, wow. If the only hand that's going to call us now is a set. I don't think aces and kings, if they're really that good of a player, they're going to have to put us on a set of queens, a set of sevens, or a set of deuces, and they can't call with two outer. So if he's as good as he's making him out to be, then the only way this guy's going to call is if he has a set of sevens, and that's not going to happen because he's not going to raise with a set of sevens, I don't think, here, if he's as good as he says he is. So let's see what happens. I'm real interested now.
Yeah, this hand's got a lot more exciting than I thought it would be. all right, so our hero thinks for a while. He said it could be trips, it could be ace, ace, king, king, or ace, queen. He says many players at the table have been overplaying top pair, ace, ace, and king, king, in my opinion. I don't know if that means a solid player is, but that's what he's thinking. He says, after what feels like forever, I call. Bad move?
Yeah, I don't like the call.
I think a call is probably the worst.
Call's the worst move of all three, I think. I think a call, now you've invested 100 and something in this hand, and what happens when a 7 comes on a turn?
It's going to be very difficult to get away from this hand now that you put that much money in. Yeah. And it's not going to slow. I don't think it's going to slow our opponent down anything if he's got a real hand. He's going to fire. Now he's going to fire out another 120, 150 bucks on
the
turn.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is the art. One of the arts of poker that people don't realize, and I don't think I realize it enough myself when I'm actually playing, is getting the better hands to fold, or to get the potential better hands to fold. And in this case, the only way to win this hand, I think, is going to be to have shoved there, because now that you've called, you're on his terms. You don't know what you don't know what he has, and the turn now is going to change everything. As far as if a 7 comes, or an overcard now gives him a bigger set. If a king or an ace comes, and those are the hands that you put him on, you're going to fold. If an ace comes, are you going to fold because you thought he had ace queen? So now you've lost 100 and something. But if you shove, those hands likely would have folded, and then you don't know what would have come on the turn on the river. So
that's right.
Yeah, I don't like the call, and I think it's the worst of all three moves.
All right, well, that's what he did, and the turn is the deuce of hearts. All right, so our board now is queen of spades, seven of hearts, deuce of clubs, deuce of hearts. So we boated up, but we're behind the pocket sevens.
You know, it absolutely changes nothing. If you think about it, it really changes nothing, because all the hands that we were up against, that we thought we might have been up against, is the same scenario.
Yeah.
If he has sevens, we're still beat. And if he has aces or kings or queens, there's still the ace queen. There's still the...
still behind us.
Right. So, yeah, I don't like this at all.
Yeah, it's an interesting card where it's particularly one of our gin cards, but doesn't change anything.
Doesn't really change much as far as where we are in the hand. I mean, it gives you one less card to worry about, street to worry about. I mean, now when you're doing your betting and calculations, because there's only one card left to come. But again, if he has sevens, we didn't put him on that, so we should have shoved pre-flop or pre-turn. So I don't think it changes anything. I think if he bets now, we gotta shove or call. I mean, or if he goes all in, I mean. So, what happens?
All right. Undergone bets out 125.
Well, we got to be getting close to being down to nothing now. Because he was down to 460 before this, wasn't he? And then he put 60 in at least, and then 100. So, we got to be getting down to, what, half our stack? That's half our stack now?
Yeah. Well, we put in 120, 126. Yeah, we only put, 126 in.
We put 126 in, but we were down to, 460?
No, we were up to just over 500 before the hand started.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said he lost some hands.
His stack had dwindled. Our opponent's stack dwindled about 400.
Oh, our opponent's. Oh, okay. All right. So we still have some money left. I still feel like if we're going to go with what our read was on for me and you, our read on the flop was to shove. But for him, you know, he's thinking he's got the world here now, I'm sure. I'm thinking he's way ahead. So I'm obviously shoving here. I can't just call again. I have to shove and hope this guy just has aces, or kings, or even ace queen. Right? I can't imagine.
You know what? I would have changed it a little bit. I don't know. I'm just talking out loud here. But what do we accomplish by shoving now? Now he's got so much money in that he's pot committed. I think he's got 180 behind. So if we shove, is he really going to fold? And if he's ahead of us with one of these hands, then that's just costing us that. Well, I guess it's going to get in on the river anyhow, right?
Yeah, I think I want his money now anyway. If I firmly believe I'm ahead with one card to come, he's a huge dog.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I want him
in. What I'm saying is, I'm just trying to make the calculation. Am I putting chips in the pot that I don't need to if I'm behind here? But he's going to put them all in on the river.
Yeah, no matter what you do, the river. So you might as well just shove here. And again, there's only one hand you're really behind on. I don't think Queen Deuce is out there, right? It can't be. Can it be? No, because we have... Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the only thing that... There's no way... The hands that are reasonable aren't out there, so... Sevens is the only hand, I think, that we're really trailing. So I have no reason not to shove here, because...
And the deuce really does embolden an ace-ace or a king-king.
Yeah, it makes it feel better.
You got two pair, and you can't put us on a deuce, really, I don't think, so...
Yeah, so I think he's not going to be able to fold. It's probably going to turn out that he's going to hit a three or two-outer on the river to beat us, but because it's a hand of the week. But I have no problem putting it all in. I want all of his money in the middle now. I've got a full house, and only one full house that's conceivable beats us, so... And again, we didn't think that was the hand he held by the way he played it, so I'm shoving.
Okay. So our hero says, can I really lay this down? Two hands beat me, I think, forever, and shove, putting them all in for his remaining 180. Our opponent insta-calls and turns over queen, queen.
He did have queen, queen. Wow.
The case deuce does not appear on the river, and we lose. So he wants to know how poorly did I play that?
Well, the beginning is where you play it the worst, and then... Yeah. You know, you should never play it. The other thing, too, I wanted to bring up before was this was a guy that was hurting a little bit. His stack had been dwindled a little bit, and maybe he wanted that $6. He wanted an opponent with a big, strong hand, which I was feeling like was aces or kings. But queens is a pretty good hand, too. It surprises me that he would raise.
I don't know. Yeah, it seems an odd bet no matter what, because, I mean, unless you're... the $6 doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I just don't know if he wants an opponent.
And you might as well just limp with it. Why put the extra $4 in? And I
would never limp with queens under the gun.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, to me, there's no difference between limping and a raise to $6.
Yeah. Well, it's a 3X. Maybe he just wanted one or two opponents.
But it's a 3X in a cash game.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean anything.
I know. It's an odd raise. I just thought maybe he wanted the opponents.
He induced the call with it, you know.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is I don't understand the raise on the, unless he was convinced we had sevens.
The raise on the flop is
the right. Raise on the flop is very interesting to me. There is no danger at all on this board. You know,
I mean, to me that's just a guy that's been getting kicked and wants to be sure he doesn't get kicked one more time.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Hey, I'm gonna make you pay to kick me this time.
Yeah.
My top set on this dry board. But hey, you got us the call with it, so you know.
Yep.
Can't complain to that.
Yep.
All right. So his next question, Scott's next question: did I have to lay that down on the re-raise or on the turn?
Well, we talked about the re-raise laying it down, and like you said, getting away from it. But when we went through the cycling of hands that were plausible, I don't think I could have, definitely not on the turn. I'm not letting it go. The turn, definitely not. I have a full house, and there's no way you could put them on queens there. You just can't put them on queens.
And the money that we haven't invested in, the money that our opponent has left, I think, are all the factors.
Yeah.
I could get away from it on the flop.
Exactly. The flop is the only place I can see you getting away from this hand. I can't get away from it on the turn. Only pocket sevens and pocket queens beat you at that point, and one of those was very unlikely, and the other one we thought would be unlikely. Given the way you played it now, yeah, sevens was likely. And queens was likely. So it's just weird that he the way he played it was really weird. I mean, I guess it's tricky, but it's very vulnerable the way he played it.
Yeah, I don't think it's an effective tricky, to be honest. I mean, it got us here, but that's I think if that's the way you're going to play queens, both pre-flop and on that kind of flop, then I think you're costing yourself a lot of money over the long term.
Yeah, I agree. That was very interesting. I never would have put him on pocket queens. I thought 7-7 might have been something that he could have just shown up with, and we would have said, wow, why did he play it that way? But queens, holy cow. Because, yeah, like you said, that $6 raise under the gun, very interesting raise.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think he'd make it 10, 12 or something, try to get one opponent, and then slow play it the whole way when you flop top set with no foreseeable draws. But he didn't do that. He played it weird, and then he played it aggressive, and got paid off. The case queen, you know, he got so lucky to case queen. But the overall, you know, moral of the story is let go of queen deuce when you're up and you've rallied.
Yeah, I think that's the final thing is that I take away from this is, you know, really you're thinking something good can come from that. I really don't think anything good could come from that.
No.
It's just not worth it. And again, it's a cash game. There's no reason to be that play those weird hands when you're a beginning player, or really even a more experienced player. And a cash game, and a tournament is completely different. But a cash game, you know.
And you're looking to wrap it up. Why play that hand?
Yeah.
You can't make any nuts out of it except for flopped quads. So on the flop, and then maybe ace king three of diamonds, and it's such a impossibility. Just fold the hand and go home with all your money. You know, that's just it. Chalk it up to experience, but really, you should have gone home a big winner or a decent winner instead of a $350 loser.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Scott knows that, and we'll ease the pain a little bit with the most expensive deck of J Design playing cards ever won on the show. They are the official playing cards of Ante Up. You can pick up your own decks in the Ante Up store at anteupstore.com. And remember to send your hands of the week, comments, questions, complaints to podcast@anteupmagazine.com. And if we use it on the show, you too will win some wonderful swag.
This is the fan show. The fans really provided all of our content this week. We really appreciate it. And very interesting topic, top five. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.